The Brothers Wisp.
You're now listening to Greg. It's the Brothers Wisp. Let's take a ride.
Hey, everybody. This is Greg with Greg Talks number 10. This time around, we have a brand new face, shiny new face. It is Stephanie Burdine.
Hi.
There you go. This is the part where you say hello, Stephanie.
Hello, Stephanie.
Ah, there you go. So this is, just for everybody who's unsure, this is a podcast companion to the normal Brothers Wisp. This is really filled more with my thoughts from the week and generally a guest's thoughts for the week. So this is a very informal mix of technical and non-technical material. So if that's not your bag, proceed with caution or wait for the other Brothers Wisp stuff. You're looking for just purely technical and boring and nerdy dudes. So this time we've got a dudette. That's awesome.
Hey.
You are the first official female we've had on the podcast. No, I take it back. You were the second. There was one from Australia a long time ago who popped in for like 5 seconds. So,
oh, there you go.
Yeah, first North American. First North American. So that's good. So
yeah.
Let's get a little background on you, Stephanie. You live here in College Station, so you're very, very near me. You have some sort of affiliation with James, who's done a few of these, right?
Yeah, yeah, some sort of affiliation.
Okay.
He calls me his wife, you know.
Oh, gotcha. But you're actually brother and sister, right?
Oh, God.
You're not from Kentucky. I get it. I get it. No. So, but you are in IT, right?
Yes. So I'm a project manager. So I get to work with a team of developers. It's kind of like chasing rabbits around the... No, not rabbits. Rabbits are too organized. I think it's more like herding cats.
Rabbits are too early. Well, you know, and it's interesting too, most of the guys I think that listen to this are kind of like systems administrators or network administrators, and so I'm assuming running a team of devs is a whole different animal, like you said, not necessarily rabbits, more like cats, huh?
Yeah, they what I've noticed about network and systems guys are they tend to kind of want to be off in their own little world and kind of doing their own thing. Developers want to collaborate and be together, but they have no idea how to get that organization going. So it's a different beast altogether, I think.
Really? I would have thought it would have been the other way around. I thought developers would want to kind of lock themselves in a room all by themselves and just bang away at code until, you know, they woke up at 5 in the morning and realized they had fallen asleep on their keyboard or something.
They probably do that once in a while, and they think they want that, but once they have it, they don't like it. I've found that out over the last few weeks.
Hmm. Excellent. Well, how's, I mean, as everybody knows, we're doing all this isolation stuff, so I'm assuming most of your team is working remote, right? They're working from the house sort of thing?
Yes, almost 100% of my team, so it's more like 80% of my team is working remote. We do have a tester. And he's in our campus in College Station, and he's doing hardware tests and stuff like that. He has to be on site to do his job.
One of the few that's on site.
We're all remote. What's that?
So, I'm assuming this is brand new for those guys. What's it like? What was it like before and after the transition?
So before the transition, I actually had one of my developers say, I'd love to work from home. I'd be so productive.
Famous last words.
Famous last words. Well, just to be fair, though, he did have a newborn in between that statement and today.
Oh, fair enough.
But apparently his productivity is a little low. It's the newborn. It's what he says.
Slightly distracted. I can assume that. Well, I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Aside from being at home all the time and your wife thinking, oh my God, somebody can finally take this thing off my hands for a couple of minutes. You know, there's the lost sleep at night. And then, I mean, you know, everybody gets that. Everybody's in that boat.
It's true.
As well as the undue stress of, oh my gosh, I've got this kid and I got to make sure he doesn't get sick. So, you know,
yeah.
I can totally understand all that stuff.
Yeah.
Pretty nutty. What's what's your favorite part of running a team like that?
So one of them has it's actually someone who works with James as well, has said that he has weaponized autism is what he calls it. And man, It makes a lot of sense. I feel like my entire team, they're, so we have the regular developers who are doing like, you know, fixes on the, on our portals and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then you have my guys who are doing ops and they're building environments and infrastructure, and as well as the regular coding. And so I feel like I could be a little biased, but I feel like my guys are like up here compared to most of the other guys.
Which is ironic because you're doing visual stuff and most people aren't actually watching this. So,
oh, I didn't know that. I thought it was visual.
Nah, for sure. But no, so you, yeah, but I mean, that's what everybody does, right? They always think that their baby's the best looking baby out there, right? Everybody else's kid is ugly. I get it.
Yeah. But yeah, they're a little bit higher up there on the intelligence level, genius scale type guys. These are really highly effective professionals, and I feel like the more intelligent you get, the less organized you are. Almost not that organized people aren't intelligent, but
right.
I don't know. It just seems like you get distracted with more things. You focus on one thing and not other things.
You know, that's something I've seen is we had a sister company at Aston, and it was Lintech, and they do a lot of research. So they've got a bunch of PhDs, a bunch of brilliant guys over there. But what I've noticed is it seems the more renowned that guy is in his field and the better he is at that thing, it's like his intelligence is almost paper thin. Like he is a genius on this thing that is so narrow. And then normal parts of everyday life are a mystery to some of these people. You know, they're just, they miss normal social cues and things like the time some guy sent out a company-wide email to everyone in all companies telling everybody that he shouldn't have got the extra big Slurpee because the sugar gave him like really bad diarrhea. You know, it's you know what I mean? It's stuff like that. Or the guy that was like vacuuming the parking lot at 2 a.m. You know, it's just they're different sorts of dudes. And I don't know if that's true for the guys you're working with, but it seems great guys for sure, right? But just different.
Yeah, they're different. They're awesome. I don't know. I'm different too, so I fit in with them. It took a little bit for me to kind of elbow my way in a little bit, but I don't know. They're fun to work with. They've got a lot. They got a good dynamic going on. It's a weird dynamic.
Why do you say it took a little while to elbow your way in? What does that mean?
So I'm only 32 and I'm female.
Baby.
And yeah. And, they didn't think I was techie enough at first. And I would have to say I would agree with them. I just started in the tech industry within the last 18 months. So, I had to earn the respect versus already having it when I got put on the team. There were multiple levels to that.
Well, I think anybody coming into a team has to earn respect. I don't think it matters what your pedigree is. People are still going to think I've been here. I've slogged my way through this, and you know, you got to show me that you deserve to be here too. Tell me, you said you weren't in tech. So tell me about your sordid past. Cause I know it's a very interesting windy road that you made your way into technology.
Super messy. So I'm a jack of all trades, which I know you're not aware. Like if I'm a jack of all trades, I think you're up about three levels higher, you and James. You guys do a billion different things and you're better at them than I am. But I tend to be good at whatever I try. Not great, just kind of good. And so I can jump into anything and do it pretty well. So I started out as a soldier and then I jumped into education. And then I was a professor, and throughout all that, I realized I was working 60 hours a week for a very low amount of pay. And, you know, teachers don't get paid very well. And
You're going way too fast. You're going way too fast. So you were a soldier in what branch of the military?
The Army.
All right. So you were, what do you call those people? Because like Marines, what, they're jarheads, right?
They're jarheads.
Yeah.
We're soldiers.
You're a soldier? That's what you call
it's just soldiers.
Army? Yeah. Just a soldier. Okay. Well, so then you went into education And well, I mean, what's your education, like your personal education at college? Like, you have a couple of masters something like that, right?
I have 5 degrees.
Oh, jeez.
I know, it's ridiculous. I actually started out with cosmetology.
Okay.
Got my cosmetology license. Hated that. I absolutely hated it. It was terrible. But I finished that thing.
So what are you qualified to do? Like, hair and nails?
Everything.
Or what?
I can do hair, nails, facials.
Yeah.
Like, it's aesthetic.
You doing some Brazilian waxing or?
No, I declined that one. You know? It wasn't even the female waxing. It was the male waxing. Oh. I didn't want to, you know.
Oh, I don't even think about how much hair. You've seen me, how much hair. It's more of a pelt that I have. And I don't even, like, imagine. You know, it's like that scene from 40-Year-Old Virgin where he became the Man-O-Lantern or whatever. Just waxing shit.
Oh, God.
That's horrible. Anyway, so you have a cosmetology.
I have an associate's general studies because I still didn't know what I wanted to do. And then I got a bachelor's in biological science education. And then my master's was in mathematics education. And then my second master's is IT management.
Oh, baller. When did you get the IT management one?
I'm actually currently still working on that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
But after you got your... you said mathematics masters. You started. I mean, you weren't like at high school, right? Weren't you a professor at college somewhere?
Yes, I was working at Blaine College as a professor for mathematics.
All right. So, how do you feel like working with all of those emotionally stunted in-betweeners prepared you for working with IT people? I can't imagine how that translates.
That doesn't correlate at all.
No. Because we really are, a vast majority of us are just arrested development. You know, I mean, we're trapped at 17 or 18. So I'm assuming it was a fairly smooth transition. You're like, oh, I recognize where I'm at. Okay.
Actually, yeah, I went straight from being a professor into this IT career, and a lot of the skills translated. So I worked in student, I liked to do, it's called student-centered learning, and it gets people to be responsible for themselves, which usually the teacher's kind of responsible for everything, so it's a different way of teaching. It translated really well into managing IT people.
Student-centered, so give me the elevator pitch on that.
Okay, so student-centered learning is when you identify areas that students can take control of. And when those areas are identified, you put them in charge of and responsible for that particular activity in their lives. And it just empowers students to be tiny humans instead of children. If you're working with children or, you know, sometimes adults.
IT people. Yeah, you can say it. So give me an example, if you can, of kind of what that means.
So instead of... directly related to education, instead of reminding your students over and over again that they have an assignment, you give them a way to keep track of that assignment, and then you kind of let them fail if they fail. And a lot of teachers are afraid to let their students fail, and so they'll kind of carry them along to the end of the class. This is a kind of a slap in the face at the very beginning, and they're like, oh my gosh, it's so hard! And then they figure out how to do it, and then by the end of the class, you're not having to do as much work keeping them on task and such. So it's similar to Agile. It's empowering the developers to be in charge of themselves and responsible for themselves and pull in tickets themselves and that sort of thing. It gives them the power to work.
Gotcha. So you make them accountable for it. Do you kind of, at least in the education piece, do you kind of give them strategies on accountability and how to do that? Or is it just like, good luck? How's that work?
No, you definitely set up. So you work with positive and negative. Those are probably not the correct terms, and I can't think of them right now, but positive and negative consequences. And use logic. You don't give consequences that don't make sense. So this also goes into parenting and managing and everything. There's a consequence for every action, mm-hmm. regardless of whether you're at work or at school or at home. And a lot of them are just natural, but it's pointing those natural consequences out and kind of enforcing enforcing consequences if they're not natural, I guess.
Gotcha. You know, I found most of the guys that I've, and this was, God, this was a struggle for me for a really long time. And I can't say that I 100% have it mastered. I've got my hands around it to the most, for the most part. But coming up with kind of a project management style or accountability system for myself was really tough. And then working with my guys to, you know, because it's like, I'm not your PAA, you know, your personal analog assistant. I'm not here to constantly nag you and say, all right, did you do this in this project? How about this? How about this? How about that? You know, it's like, because it's like, I want to give you the thing, make sure you have all the tools required to complete the task. And then you come to me if you've got a problem or when it's complete, either of those is fine, but it's like, I don't want to have to. And so helping guys develop that has always been a struggle for me. So I was just curious if you kind of make a framework for them, or, you know, because what I found is everybody's accountability system that really works for them is slightly different or very different. And I was never introduced to one until I forced myself to, like, 7 years ago. Like, I can't, you know, I was well in my 30s. And so I was just curious, like, are teachers trying to introduce different accountability concepts to kids nowadays to maybe help them? Golly, dude, I would have been so much more productive in my younger years had somebody forced me to do that. Well, you're right, because they did. They would just spoon feed me as required. Yeah. So is it a new way of thinking sort of thing?
It is. Okay. Yeah. I wrote my master's thesis on it. It was, it's relatively new and it's difficult. So a lot of teachers won't do it. It's not something that is frequently done. Some teachers intuitively do it, but I've used it with my developers too. And they don't know I'm using it, but I am. And so some of the ways that you show them that they're failing or succeeding is by running metrics. And that's a very Scrum thing to do as well. So we start by identifying what we're going to produce metrics on. And then we push for that one thing. And it's important to only focus on improving one or two things at a time, because otherwise it's overwhelming.
Right.
So you probably felt that, like, you try to organize everything and you're like, oh, there's just so many things, and then you don't organize anything at all. So
for sure. There was a book I read that was transformative for me, and I heard somebody mention it multiple times before I ever actually looked at it, and I got through it pretty fast. Actually, I gotta admit, I didn't read the whole thing. I read up until the parts where I, like, got what I needed, and then I stopped. Which is probably not the right way of doing it. There's probably some big epiphany right at the end that I missed, but it was Getting Things Done. And in that one, they really just talk about building a list. And if it's something you can do in like 5 minutes or less, you do it now. You don't put it on the list. And then you constantly go through the list every day. And then, you know, as things are on there and you can knock them off, you kind of work through them. If it's something that you have to kick down the road, you move it to a different list, like in the future. You know, this is stuff that I can accomplish now. And it's just, I don't know, that sort of thinking has really helped me get through a lot of long-term projects. But you know what I've also found is that, and you probably get a sense of this now too, is that as you move to where I'm not really completing small, simple tasks anymore, now I'm doing more like bigger project management, it feels like I never get a win. You know what I mean? Like, these things are never done. It's like, I just want to like do a little check mark and feel good about myself. Like, I did a thing. But I haven't really gotten that at work, because it's like, I could do those things or I could delegate them to somebody and that guy's actually going to learn how to do that thing. And he needs to learn that thing. And then repetition is the key for him to really lock it in and learn to troubleshoot. And so it's like, I would be robbing him of that opportunity if I took it from him just because I want that quick win and I know how to do it. Yeah. Do you run into that stuff? Like, do you need that gratification every now and then? Like, I did a thing.
Of course. I had not too long ago, I was just absolutely miserable at work. Just having a crappy day. One of those days. And
I have no idea what
wasn't feeling
about.
Yeah, no, you never have those.
Never.
One of my developers came up to me and just told me what a good job I was doing and how much I'd helped the team progress, and he was feeling valued again, where he had felt like he wasn't performing well enough or he wasn't moving fast enough. And I'd identified some tasks that he could do. So that way he could feel that gratification and he could feel like he was doing something well.
Right.
And he noticed it, and then he thanked me for it, which in turn gave me gratification for assisting him feel the same way.
That's cool. I mean, that's an awesome way of looking at it. You know, and I love to try and praise my guys as much as possible, even for like mundane stuff. Like I'll see that they grabbed a task, took care of it, and I never had to interact. I'm like, dude, thank you so much for that, you know? Cause it really...
I didn't have to talk to you today.
Well, you know what I mean? It's like, to me, that's showing that they're growing, right? Because a lot of the guys, I don't know about your team, but I get babies on my team. And so they have a lot of professional and personal development to do. And so you kind of, you know, you're helping guide them and shape them. And as you see them grow, it's just very gratifying to see that for me. So,
yeah.
That goes back to some old daddy issues I have, but
I don't think this is the platform for that.
It absolutely is. This is the companion. I get to talk about whatever in this one. Yeah. So it definitely it feeds that little man that says, you know what, I can do this. I don't know why you couldn't, but I can. So here we go. Yeah. So that's interesting. But so you got into IT. You're doing all that stuff. Now you're working on your master's in IT project management. Is what you said.
It's just IT management.
IT management, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. I'm getting my CAPM, which is it's like a PMP, but it's for people who haven't been working in the industry as long. So it's the baby version of the certification.
Is it more or less a stepping stone to get the full PMP or no?
Yeah, it can be. You don't have to have it before you get the PMP, but you do have to have a significant number of hours on projects in order to take the certification.
So it sounds like you're a very goal-oriented human. If I had to guess from all the stuff that you do and all these accomplishments, is that kind of how you make your way through your occupation or through whatever? You set this goal of like, here's this thing I'm going to attain, and then you just work your ass off till you get there. And then how do you decide what the next goal is going to be?
Well, I had a really hard time with that when I started in the industry because I started as a secretary.
Ah, awesome.
There's no stepping stone from secretary to IT manager.
No.
So... So I just started asking around, trying to find my niche, I guess. I took the job, and the boss, the manager who was hiring me, he said, you're overqualified for this position. I was like, I know, but I really want to work here, and I just don't know what I want to do yet. He was very respectful of that and said, sure, give me a chance. And I kind of jumped into, I tried coding. I learned a little bit about networking. I took the AWS engineer cert course. And then I ended up doing Scrum Master, and I really liked that until I figured out what project management was.
So what's Scrum Master in the context of
Scrum Master?
I only know it from rugby. That's the only way I know it.
Scrum Master. There's a Scrum Master in rugby?
Well, they have a scrum, like where all the guys like get together like in a huddle sort of, and they're all head-to-head. They call it a scrum.
Is rugby the one with the sticks and the nets on the sticks?
No, it kind of looks like football, only they're not constantly blowing the whistle. It's sort of different. But they don't wear pads either.
That's the one where they beat the shit out of each other.
Well, actually, supposedly they don't hurt each other nearly as much as people in the NFL does. Since they don't have pads, they don't like hit each other really hard because they would hurt themselves too. Although they hit the hell out of each other sometimes, don't get me wrong, but I think there's less traumatic brain injury.
Punch each other?
Nah, they just kind of like knock each other over and just kind of push each other back and stuff. Anyway.
Okay.
Anyway, what is a Scrum Master? What's the? Give me some context on that.
So it's an agile scrum is a form of agile work, and scrum master is the person who facilitates the DevOps team. They facilitate them in organization and communication and transparency. They're doing tickets in Jira for them and making sure that they know what they're supposed to be working on. And they're kind of the person who performs all the ceremonies, like the meetings and such, like backlog grooming and sprint planning and stuff. Gotcha. That are done when
you, yeah. So you're the person that has actual human skills and you can communicate with other humans on behalf of your devs.
Yes.
Okay. So you keep talking about agile. If somebody's completely unfamiliar with agile, why does this word keep coming up?
So agile is the hot word right now in technology. It's everyone's so doing it.
Okay. Well, explain it to me because I'm not doing it.
So normally tech companies work in a waterfall method that starts at the top and cascades down. It takes a long time, costs a lot of money. Agile is supposed to be better because it gives the team more power, and it kind of empowers your developers to be able to pick up projects and tickets and such on their own and know exactly what's going to happen each week. You focus on small parts of a product being released instead of these massive projects. So instead of having an entire software written, you're going to release small amounts of software that are functional on their own and valuable to the company, but aren't taking 5 months of development and 3 months of code review and that sort of thing.
Okay. Excellent. That's interesting. Something else I've noticed you failed to mention is that you are also a novelist.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is
I just kind of slipped my mind.
This is all techie.
So how many novels have you released up to this point?
I think I'm at 11.
Jeez.
I'm not quite sure. I haven't counted for a while.
I'm sure. So they're not all lined up on your wall back there, beautifully displayed.
I wish.
So what's your genre of choice there?
So I do multiple genres. I have 3 pen names. My favorite is science fiction, but that is not the moneymaker. So I write clean romance and steamy romance.
Clean romance and steamy romance. What's the... oh, God. See, we keep venturing in all these areas I have no knowledge of. In particular, romance of any sort.
Yeah, romance.
I'm not sure what that word is. Give me a second, I'm going to Google it. But what's the difference between clean romance and steamy romance?
Well, to keep it rated PG, one is a Hallmark movie and the other one is a rated R movie.
Okay. Well, okay, clean and steamy. What are the other variations on romance then?
There's sweet, which is somewhere in the middle. That's kind of a gray area.
Is that somewhere between clean and steamy, right in between those?
Yes. Yeah. And then you got erotica, which is kind of self-explanatory.
You're right. Just the opposite end of... So really, that's just 4 genres in romance? That's all you get?
I mean, there's sub-genres like romantic comedies and contemporary or historical.
I've never even... It blows my mind because one of my favorite genres of movie is rom-com, and I never thought about romantic comedy novels. I don't know why that didn't occur to me that would exist, but it seems like it would, right?
Yeah, they do. I actually hate reading romance, so I, yeah.
Oh my God. That reminds me of like this lady. She used to own this restaurant called The Lemon Wedge. And she was this amazing baker. She was always baking all these pies and just all this, just amazing cakes and stuff like that. And I was like, so what's your process for like coming up with these crazy flavor combinations? She goes, I don't know. I just kind of throw it together and mix it and blah, blah. I was like, so at what point do you taste it? She goes, oh, I don't. I'm like, I think she was like super gluten intolerant or something. She was like, I just make this stuff and then people buy it. I don't know, man. I was like, dude, that's crazy. That's crazy. So you're writing awesome. This stuff. You're like, I don't like this slop, but you're spitting it out. I get it. That's crazy.
I am.
How does one?
It's a money maker.
How did you get into that? Like, how? What? I'm assuming you just decided you were going to set a goal for yourself that I'm going to write this novel. But what? I mean, what convinced you to write a novel? Where does that start?
Well, it was in one of my English classes. She had us write an essay, and it was fictional. And I finished it, and she said, "I want the rest."
Hmm.
And I was like, "Oh, okay." And she's like, "Why don't you finish this?" And I was like, "Okay, I'll give it a shot." So I looked up how long a novel was, and it was 50,000 to 100,000 words. And I was like, "All right, I'm going to sit down and write at least 50,000 words." So I did.
How long did it take you?
The first one took me over a year. It was ridiculous. It was slow, and I had no idea what I was doing. The learning curve is really steep when you're publishing. So I'm self-published. I had to do so much research. I grabbed a mentor and had them kind of, you know, show me the ropes.
That's
and everything.
Awesome.
But
awesome.
It was a long process. Yeah.
How'd you go about finding your mentor?
Facebook, you know, social networking. That's what I do.
Hey, I want to write a novel. I need somebody who's done this before, and then somebody popped up.
I did some research, and I found some groups, and I started making some good connections, and I'm pretty decent with making friends. So
yeah, I've noticed.
They were my friends. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know.
I hear you get
around.
You're
a good connection, too.
That's awesome. That's crazy, dude. It's just... You have such, I love to call it sorted, because it's so interesting. It's so varied. Like but you know what? As you start looking at these things, I can definitely see how you kind of plot a course towards things. You determine that I'm going to do this thing, and you just accomplish it. And that's pretty bizarre to me, because I know, I have this, you can probably see behind me, a monument to unfinished projects, right? So just as work catches up with me and stuff like that. But you still write novels, right? So you go to work, you do your IT project management, and you take care of six kids, so five young ones.
Five.
And then, yeah, you've got an adult child that lives at your house.
Don't lie to me. I was wondering if you were counting James.
Yeah, I was counting James, for sure. But then you also write novels at night, and then you also make Baby Yoda statues and stuff.
Oh yeah, that was hilarious. I sent it to this random romance novel author, and she goes, "What the fuck is that?" and she, she's like, "Who the hell would try to sell that thing?" She didn't know I was actually showing her it was me. I thought that was the funniest thing ever.
Oh, my bad. That's hilarious. That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah.
But, you know, something I've found is that no experience in my life has ever been wasted, right? You know, like, at some point or another, those things come back around. And so I think it's so important for people to do as many things as possible. And you have what I would describe as an insatiable curiosity, just because you're always researching stuff. You're always trying new things. You're always pushing yourself towards stuff. I don't know that your comfort zone must encompass the entire earth, because it's just like you were telling me prior to this, like I, you know, this is definitely outside of my comfort zone. And, I can't imagine how you can be in the army. You can teach people, you can run teams, and yet sitting down and talking to somebody on a podcast feels uncomfortable. That's bizarre to me. So I think it's awesome. And I don't think enough people push themselves towards new things, right? Like, to me, if you're not uncomfortable, you're not growing. You know what I mean? You're not expanding and doing things like that. So what advice would you give to people if they want to get out of their comfort zone a bit?
Identify a place that you can grow, and find something that you're excited about or curious about, and set a small goal for yourself, or set a large goal and small goals to reach that large goal, you know?
Gotcha.
So if you want to write a book, decide you're going to write a book, but break it down by the day. Don't look at the big overall 100,000 word project. You got to set small milestones for yourself.
Yeah. I would definitely, I mean, I definitely subscribe to that. I've heard it described as, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. That's great.
Right. Little chunks. And, while you have your novels, I did my, LinkedIn Learning Lynda courses. And sometimes I would have so much in front of me that I would just scream on the inside. Like, there's no way. It's just, I would contemplate how comfortable it would be to find out I have like a terminal illness. Cause it's like, then I wouldn't have to worry about this stuff anymore.
that's sad.
No, but just think how sweet it would be, the release of death. No, but you know, you've got so much stuff piling up on top of you, feel like you're going to freak out. And that's exactly what I would do, is I would just set tiny little goals. Like, today I'm going to finish one chapter of script. I'm just going to do one. And then sometimes, you know, I would have to stay up a little extra late, you know, in between, or do whatever, or burn through lunch. But yeah, definitely making those little goals. I like the idea of having a lofty goal, because I think sometimes you really need to know which direction you're going. You know, the path you take to get there may be varied, but I think definitely having an ultimate goal is a good idea.
Yeah, I think so. That dream, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. I like a little mystery in life. Like when we go on vacation, I like knowing where we're going. It may be a couple of things, but we usually play it fast and loose with everything else. I love that. Just to kind of, you know, it's like, we'll see what happens. Let's figure it out. Are you that kind of way? Are you very regimented and oriented, and you want everything on a definite schedule?
I'm kind of in between. I like to have an idea of where we're going. I'll make a schedule. Yeah.
A little in between. There you go.
In between, there we go. So I like to have like a schedule, but I don't mind changing it once we get there. I want an idea of what we're gonna do.
Yeah, one thing that drives me crazy is showing up to something late. I absolutely hate showing up to something late. That's kind of the worst thing in the world.
I seem to recall that.
Yeah, because you know, it throws everything off. But well, you know what I mean? For me, if somebody shows up late to a meeting with me, to me, and they don't have like a really good reason, to me, that's them saying their time is more valuable than mine. And I don't want to do that to anybody else, right? Because I think everybody's very limited. I just assume they have 8 million things going like I do. So their time is very valuable, and I don't want to waste that. So good, clear communication on that stuff. So I don't like being
late. I was only 1 minute late, Greg. Come on. I was 1 minute.
And yet your time is apparently more valuable than mine. So
1 minute more valuable, apparently.
No. I'm talking about like big stuff. Like, I don't want to show up to somebody's wedding late, you know, or,
yeah, especially if you're the groom.
Well, you know, stuff happens. Schedules slide. Everything's flexible. I think so long as you're clearly communicating with people, it's okay. That's interesting. So give me, I know we mentioned it a little bit, but tell me about your perspective on females in IT, because that is something that you guys are definitely underrepresented on the network engineering side. So I'm on like some but Facebook groups called like Wisp Talk. And so in the wireless ISP industry, I've seen almost no females. There's maybe two that I've seen pop in there. So very underrepresented there. I've never really met... Have I met any other female network engineers? I don't think I have. I've met other systems and security women, for sure. Yeah. And I've met other project managers like yourself in IT that are female. I know that's a lofty question, but what do you attribute some of that to?
I think I actually thought about this beforehand. It's something that's on my mind a lot. Being a math and science teacher kind of as my background, I see that our females, all the females in our society are not being pushed into those job openings, those career paths, those skill sets. I think it's just a societal thing. Women have always had a specific role in our society. And that has only just recently been challenged and started to change. And I mean, we've had some big changes over the last 50 years, but we're still challenging that idea. And I think we just need to, it's at the root. It's not that there aren't intelligent women who can do software engineering and that are like not passionate about tech and you know, learning new things. It's that we're not training our kids to be curious and to pursue, you know, sciences and maths. And that's why we have STEM programs that focus just on females instead of males, because it's a male dominated industry.
So you think it's more kind of societal, as in, this is how I learn and grow, is that I try and put things into my own words. Back at the person, they shake their head at me like I'm an idiot. But like, in your opinion, you feel like a girl, I guess, heading to college maybe has some interest in computer science-y sort of stuff, but feels like that's traditionally a male's role? Or do you think maybe they would feel uncomfortable in going that? Or like, what kind of, like, what do you mean?
No, I think it's even sooner than that. I think it's when they're little, when they're like 8, 9 years old. Males get pushed into looking into construction and building things, and it's that hands-on or cerebral architecture that they're doing that makes that construction process, that is what feeds that curiosity for building things in technology and, you know, in our cloud infrastructures and everything. And I think females are more traditionally pushed towards caring roles, like teachers and nurses and, you know, doctors or scrum masters. That's a servant leader role. A project manager is also, you should be a good servant leader. So it's more of those servant leadership roles versus those the technological building and such.
Interesting.
That was a long ramble.
No, that wasn't very long. I think I've done the majority of talking here. Just because I love the sound of my own voice. But that's interesting. You know, when you say STEM, I've always thought of it more as STEAM, right? So it's science, technology, engineering. And I think art should fit in there, as well as like mechanical stuff, right? Because I feel like that's underrepresented in a lot of what people do. Because I feel like a lot of that science stuff and education, I think there's so much, or like engineering, I think there's so much art also associated with that, because there's some of my favorite makers are also artists. So they, while they're building physical structures, they're making real things. There's also this experimentation associated with it, you know, and some of it,
yeah,
really, I think, feeds so well into the other. As they experiment and build this beautiful thing, they also discover new ways of manufacturing that. Or I need this weird fun art project I'm building to have this weird hingy thing, and so then they start experimenting, and you know, they kind of, and it's so funny, yep, how people's art will feed into kind of their professional life. And I think that's underrepresented in a lot of well, I mean, I can only look through my eyeballs, so kind of in you know, the cisgender white male, because everybody needs my opinion, you know, just from like men in technology, a lot of us don't see art in what we do, and they don't put value in that. And some of the greatest engineers I know, like this guy Nick Braulio, he came from an art background. And I think there's something about, yeah, the way artists think, like yourself, because you are so good at art as well. I've, you know, seen you make some crazy stuff, and as well as your novels, right? That's just a different part of the brain that you're entirely using there, that how people underrate that stuff. And the people that do have the ability to tap into that part of their brain, or they're better at what they do. It makes them better at all facets. And I think that comes back to, like you said, curiosity. So do you feel like young women now are just allowed to be more curious and pursue whatever they find interesting? Or, I mean,
it's getting there.
Do you think the idea of having a STEM program specifically focused on females, like, how does that differ from just saying, hey, whatever you're curious about, let's chase that, let's find it? and figure out where it goes? I mean, do you think yeah. it's STEM? Because I don't really, I was never introduced to the STEM stuff as a kid. I just kind of found it. I was just curious because, I don't know. You have that education background, so you're so much more equipped to answer any of these questions. And I've been completely interrupting you, so I will be quiet now. Hit the mute button. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. So with girls, I think that when we're, there's so much subconscious stuff going on in everyone's brains that is inherent in our society and inherent in the way we're raised. People don't even notice when they're being biased against a gender or or another race or anything like that. And so I think by focusing on females with STEM, you're attempting to be intentional about overcoming that bias instead of just passively encouraging. So I think females can find their passion for STEM without a program that's focused on them. But I think there's a lot of subconscious biases that we have to overcome in order to get there.
Gotcha. So do you feel like if that job opportunity for the receptionist at the company you're working for now didn't manifest itself, do you think you would still be interested in this IT stuff? Or do you think that's really what sparked it for you?
What sparked it for me was actually James's passion, believe it or not. Him talking about networking and talking about computers. And he teaches me things too. So he started showing me some networking and walking me through networking diagrams and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, this is art and math and science all rolled into one. I really, really like this. So it was just my jam. I was like, this is amazing. I can learn so much stuff. I haven't run out of things to learn, by the way. I have just been constantly devouring it all.
It never, ever ends. I mean, it never ends.
It's great.
You know, I'd be curious, something, I don't know why it just occurred to me, but there is so much beauty in data and in networking. When you really start getting deep in there, we start doing a lot of monitoring, a lot of trending, a lot of telemetry over time, and you can represent that stuff generally graphically is how most of us do it. And there is so much yeah. beauty in looking at the data and the way things move and people's behaviors and their patterns and how that stuff works together. Have you gotten into any of that? Because I love that stuff.
Oh, you're speaking my language. Yes. That makes me so excited.
Oh, dude, it is yes. amazing.
It's beautiful. It's fun to take all that raw data and just look at all the patterns that are going on in it. And to be able to show someone who isn't inclined to read through all that data, just show them a picture of what that data is. That's actually one of the things that got me moved into the Scrum Master position, which is where I started, and eventually in that project management, was being able to represent data in a visual way. It's really fun.
You know, what's always been something fun for me too is doing quality of service, right? And that's where, say, an apartment complex somewhere, they've only got 100 megs of internet coming in. Right. Back in the day, we actually used to have very low throughput going to these guys because that's all they would purchase. And so we'd have to do quality of service. And in that, what you do is you elevate certain things that you find important over others. And that stuff only comes to play really when there's a congestion situation, which would generally happen every night, right? When we hit what we call peak time. And I used to yeah. graph each individual queue that I would make, right? A queue being able to hold certain amounts of information. And that's how we would actually do the constraints. So you'd make queues for like real time audio. So if people are doing VoIP calls, and then you would have one for like streaming video, and then one for HTTP, and then one for gaming traffic, you'd kind of make all these buckets that you're allowing people to move stuff into. And so you'd graph that real time, and then you could watch it overnight and see how all that stuff moved. And then you would say, oh, well, they hardly used any of this bandwidth here. You'll pull it out of this queue and you'll put it over on that one. And then you can just kind of massage things slowly over time. You do more matching and prioritization. And just, I used to love doing that stuff. I don't know, man. It was just like you were a conductor.
You're such a nerd.
No, it's like you're a conductor in front of an orchestra. And you're, I mean, you're just, you're moving everything and just gracefully weaving it all together. Oh, it is so fun. It is so fun to do that stuff. I love it.
That sounds really cool.
But as you grow up and you move higher and higher up the food chain, you get to do that fun stuff less and less. I feel like in my new role, I'm taking a new role. You knew that. I feel like that excitement, all this excitement, this is where all this stuff is coming from. Like, I am getting so excited again to be able to do all this stuff. And I just super can't wait to get in there and go crazy.
Just that'll be great.
Get nutty. Let me look at my notes. I've got some notes here. There's one. That's the one. So I noticed that you left some gaps out. You were trying to move over your history pretty fast. And so a note I made for myself is somebody wanted me to, they were doing a proposal for some education money or something like that. And they wanted to use me in the proposal. And I was like, yeah, that's fine. And they were like, well, we need a bio of you. And I said, well, okay, we'll just jump on my LinkedIn and find all the parts that you think are relevant to this. And they're like, we really want you to do it. And I was thinking, God, that is awful. I hate writing my own bio. And it, evidently you were trying to gloss over it at 100 miles an hour. What is it about you that, like, why don't you, what's the cringe factor there? Does it feel like you're boasting or something? Why is it tough for you to talk about your pedigree and all of your master's degrees that you're trying to blow past? And just what's the story there?
I don't know. It just doesn't, none of it feels relevant right now because I'm working in project management. And so I can see the value added by those things, but it's hard to quantify that and tell people like what those things actually did to get me where I am right now and to teach me the skills that I have and stuff like that. So I don't know. It just, when you rattle it all off, they go, oh, she just didn't know what she wanted to do, so she did everything, you know? I don't know. I saw logical progression.
In my opinion, it's not you didn't know what you wanted to do. You actually wanted to do everything, right? Your curiosity led you to all of these things.
Wanted is past term.
Well, I don't know. You know what? That's what I do. I find a new task, and I get to some level of mastery that I feel comfortable with, and then I put that away, and I move to the next thing. And I think that's a comfortable way of moving through life. I feel like I keep building myself. But, you know, your answer there also, a couple things pop into mind. As I learned a long time ago, somebody said, nobody else is going to toot your horn, so you got to do it for yourself, right? Especially in IT, if you want to get noticed, you got to make sure people know what you did, right? And you can say it's under the guise of just clear communication, but everybody needs to know what you did.
Yeah.
You don't have to.
That's actually an important part of my job, you know. Yeah. Like I've got to be able to speak up for my developers and say what they did. When I started with them, they weren't telling anyone what they were working on. Like they were a black box, and no information was coming out at all. And I started telling everybody, just different teams, different departments, everyone. I was like, oh my gosh, guess what my guys are doing? And I walk them through like these minor accomplishments, but I'm showing that there's progress being made, and I'm showing them that they're doing things that are difficult and that have never been done before, because, you know, they built us a solution that was unique to our situation, and they were really ingenious about building it. And I wanted everyone to know that, and that boosted their morale, but it also increased everyone's confidence in them, you know?
So your displeasure for talking about your accomplishments, do you think that's how a lot of women feel and what maybe holds them back from progressing in IT?
It may be. I'm pretty blunt and honest for the most part. I just kind of say things the way they are. I've been called cocky when I rattle off what I'm good at. So I'll say, I'm actually really good at that, or I can do that, or that's something that's easy for me, or whatever. And I've been called out as cocky or arrogant. I've kind of taken a step back from that. I'm just trying to, you know, tell people what my skills are so I can assist and fill in gaps and everything. But that's not really how it's viewed when I say it.
Hmm. So if a woman says it, she's being cocky, she's being a bitch, she's, you know, there's all these interesting words that apply specifically to women. She's being spirited or something like that. Whereas if a guy says it, then it's he's being confident, right? He's so it's just,
I've never been called just confident. That would be great. I would love to be called confident.
Well, you know what I think is funny is you're very charming. You're very disarming. Whenever you're telling me this stuff, you're saying it with a big smile on your face. So it's hard for me to believe, you know, it's hard for me to see. Again, also, I don't assume malice in anybody. I always assume good from people, right? Like, so when they're telling me something, I'm not assuming that they're trying to, like, I didn't think you were trying to measure dicks with me. I didn't assume that that's what was happening. You know, I just assumed that you were, and that's what I assume about everybody, that they're just telling me stuff. And then I just look at people, as humans. To be honest with you, a lot of times I look at people like tools in a toolbox. I don't care what gender you are. I look at what your strengths are. You know, where can you help me in my life? Where can I fit you in to do this or that thing? Right? It doesn't really matter to me what parts you were born with.
Yeah.
It's what skills you possess is kind of how I look at people, which is, I don't know if that's the right way of looking at people, but it's my way of looking at people. So I don't care about that other stuff. It's like, can you complete the task? Can you do this thing? Can you help me? All right. So we're having some connectivity problems. So we're going to wrap it up right about here. So Stephanie, if people wanted to get a hold of you out on the internet, gasp, they may actually want to do that. How would you have them do that?
I have a LinkedIn profile and you know, they can just shoot me an email.
Okay. So find her on LinkedIn. That's Stephanie Burdine, right? Burdine.
That's correct.
Excellent. And you guys, you know how to find me. I'm Greg at gregsoul.com, where I very occasionally blog. You can also find me on the Brothers Wisp. It's brotherswisp.com. You can also become a patron and get access to our patron only Slack. That's patreon.com/brotherswisp. Throw us a couple bones. We'll get you in there and let you ask all of the lovely questions to all the lovely people. So Stephanie, thank you so much for joining us today. The first North American female.
Thanks, Greg.
And we'll talk to you really soon. Thanks, guys.
Up the tower. Bye. So all people right. Can start searching, shooting up the web in neighborhoods, net surfing. We got horrible jokes, we're loud and annoying, but we're informative facts, we're not disappointing. Just give us a listen, because fun is the mission. I'm telling you, you don't know what you are missing. Ideas and some good comedy given. If you missed the show already, don't worry, you're forgiven.